So it's a cognitive tendency. It's a way of thinking. So we can actually just tell ourselves to stop thinking like that. I could meet somebody, kind of, oh my word, never give a job to that person. I haven't spoke, they haven't said anything yet. And all I have to do is literally just going to go, hang on a minute, pause, give the person a chance. Right, let's move on.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to today's show. Today we are going to be talking about diversity. We're going to be talking about bias. We're going to be talking about how you create a more human-centered workplace in light of some of the shortcomings, pitfalls, and natural tendencies that we all have when it comes to these things. And our guest today is going to help us do that. He is Professor Bina Kondola, OBE, which is the order of, now help us with that, is the order of?
I'm an officer of the Order of the British Empire.
Officer of the Order of the British Empire. That might be the coolest title anyone on this show has ever had, Bina. I am pleased to say I can finally meet an officer of the Order of the British Empire. Our guest today, Bina. So, Bina, you're a business psychologist, senior partner, co-founder of Pern Kondola. Over the past 40 years, worked on a wide variety of projects for public and private sector clients all over the world, as well as leading the practice. Bina is also the author of 10 different books, many bestsellers in that. Visiting professor at Leeds University, and you might guess from the accent, joining us from the Midlands, England, UK today. So we're so glad to have you here. And Bina, you were awarded that OBE distinguishment there in 2008 for your services to disadvantaged people and diversity, also on the Asian power list. So with all those accolades, I am so glad, and the coolest title in the history of Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Welcome to the show today. I'm so glad.
It's a great pleasure to be here, David. Yeah, right, it's an enormous pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure, and I'm looking forward to learning from you today. So we're going to learn more about your work and how it can help us as in our leadership. But before we do any of that, I'd like to ask you if you could take us back as far back in your memory as comes to mind about your first memory of yourself or earliest memory that you can remember of yourself as a leader, and you can use whatever definition appeals to you.
Ooh. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think the first memory that comes back actually was when I captained the second 11 cricket team at school. I was the second 11, so I was never good enough to get into the first team, but I was keen on cricket. And they didn't have a captain, so I asked the sports teacher whether I could captain the second 11. He said yes, and then we played our first match against our local rivals. I still live in my hometown actually, so we played our local rivals just down the road, we were all out for 13 runs. It was like the lowest score the school had ever got in a match, and then the headmaster the next day was given the sports results, and they came to the second 11, and Warwick School got 120 and we got 13 all out, and there were sniggers in the school hall, and I've got to be a captain now. I've got to be like a proper, so what do we do in the next game? And actually we came back and we won the next game, and we didn't have a bad season, but it was that kind of this, I'm not larking around. It may be the second 11, but this isn't, it is fun and it's meant to be fun, but it's not just fun. You actually have to get this team together. That was a big moment for me, actually.
That is so fascinating. I mean, and for the non-cricket enthusiasts, I'm glad you put that into perspective, that the first squad had won by a score, or had scored 10 times the number of points that you had. Oh my, and now you're realizing, what have I raised my hand for?
It was the sniggering in the school hall. That's what kind of lived with me, because that was just embarrassing.
Sometimes that's true though. That's what can prompt us to realize the responsibility that we have available to us if we choose to accept it and take it on, is to recognize that there's a sense of self-respect and responsibility available. That certainly has a motivating factor sometimes.
Yeah, and I had to look at, you know, whilst I wanted to be fun, I couldn't just pick my friends if they weren't good enough. And I'm one of the team. A good friend of mine, like a really good friend of mine, and I picked him because he was a good friend of mine, and he wanted to be in the cricket team, and I thought, I've got to drop him. You can't play. So he was dropped for the second game and for the rest of the season.
Wow, what an important and tough leadership lesson to get at a young age. Wow,
that was a great question. I've never actually reflected on that at all ever. That's the when you asked, that was the first thing that came into my head.
I ask every guest on this show. Our listeners know this. I ask every guest that question, and it is always for me so insightful to see what our earliest leadership experiences are, and they're different for everyone. But and sometimes there are through lines to the work that we do today, and other times they're just these moments of recognition. It's I definitely enjoy learning those. Someday, listener, I'm going to do an episode where we're just going to snip all of those first experiences and see what we learn from all of that.
There's another book there, David.
There probably is. Yeah. But today's a day that our new book just came out. For listeners who are listening in real time, you're aware of that. It's a couple months back, but not today. We'll write that one in the future. Mm. All right. So, Bennett, your big idea, your area of expertise, and when we're talking about human-centered leadership, is all about unraveling unconscious bias in the workplace. Mm. And I am curious if you could orient us a little bit. I think in today's age, most of us are familiar with the idea of bias and that exists. But I think there are many people who still wrestle with what it even is. And so if you could just ground us to start the conversation, what is unconscious bias, and particularly how it affects us in the workplace? And then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, the definition I like is that it's a misleading cognitive tendency. So it's a way of thinking that leads us to the wrong conclusion. And we don't realize we're doing it. We don't want to reach wrong conclusions. And we don't realize we're doing it. And it's something that affects all of us. I mean, it's the human beings are incredible in terms of our capacities to do things. Our brains are amazing, the speed with which they operate. And there are bugs in the system. And it's those bugs in the system is where our biases emerge. And some of the biases are to do, some of our biases may be unconscious. But that example you just got out of me, actually, which was through your fabulous question, is that sometimes, you know, we make decisions because we have favorites, and we do it for other reasons, for reasons other than they're the best decision for the organization or the team, but it makes sense to us, but they're not fair. And so even things like favoritism, where we know we're doing it, it's still a bias.
All right. Misleading thinking that leads us to those
misleading cognitive tendency. Yeah. Misleading thinking. Yeah. Better way of doing it.
Oh, I like cognitive tendency. That's my brain shortened cognitive tendency to thinking. So cognitive tendency. There we go. Well, and I appreciate that definition too, because it helps us reflect on our own, as you said, there's a bug in the system. It helps us reflect on our own software and what just naturally happens to say, okay, amazing, capable of such amazing things and problem solving and creativity and all the things. And there are also some of these tendencies that may have even served a purpose at some point in terms of shortcutting and keeping us safe, but no longer do in this context.
Well, they still serve a purpose. I mean, the you know, the shortcuts we take, the speed with which we make decisions, they still serve a purpose, and that's what's made us the most dominant species on the planet. And there are bugs in the system, so it's that part of it as well. The two things work together. You know, being able to make very fast decisions, to be able to process information, and like you said, use these shortcuts works. And then sometimes it doesn't. And it's actually recognizing that there are occasions when it lets us down.
Well, let's examine a few of those occasions. So, and you're an expert in this, obviously spend a lot of time in this. I think we can all immediately kind of go to our own reckoning. But in your experience, what are some of the more common areas that might be the easiest ones for us to look at? You mentioned favoritism. What are some of the other of these types of unconscious bias that you see are most common?
Yeah, well, the biggest bias we have, actually, the biggest bias, which nearly everybody is prone to, is known as a self-serving bias or an egocentric bias. It's the bias we have to ourselves. So I was working with a group of 200 leaders in a global bank. It's a bank you'll have heard of. They're a client. And these 200 leaders from all around the world, we were doing an inclusive leadership program with them. And one of the questions we asked them was, when you compare yourself to the other 199 colleagues on the program on inclusive leadership, do you think you are below average, average, or above average? And 100% of them said they were above average.
Which mathematically does not work.
Yeah. And of course, they were, they're bankers. They're very numerical. And when we presented that, said this is what you said, they all laughed as well. So, and in fact, that's the one of the biggest obstacles we have to accepting bias is that we think it's somebody else's problem. Thank you for telling me that, and thank goodness I'm not like that. But you need to tell everybody else. And I have that tendency. I mean, I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal here. When I read things and research things and write about things, I learn more about myself, actually.
I'm just thinking of that tendency that you just described, that self-bias. And I've seen that kind of stat, ask people, are you rate yourself in terms of the quality of your driving, operating an automobile? And I certainly would put myself at least average, if not above average. But wait a minute. What does it cost me to say maybe I'm below average? Because as soon as I might acknowledge such a thing, I have to, I guarantee I am below average in many things. But as soon as I try to look at that, if it's something that I care about, now I have to do something about it, or potentially I'm at least looking at the possibility that maybe I should.
Yeah, exactly. And it's being it get, I find it gets easier as I get older. It's that sense of humility. That I'm never going to be a good at some things as I want to be, including being an inclusive leader, which frustrates the hell out of me, actually. But I'm never going to be as good as I want to be, and I'm not going to be as good as some other people. I have my own way of working, my own motivations, my own passions, and sometimes they get in the way.
And yet, at least in leadership, I imagine in other aspects of life, but from my experience, it seems to me that some of the best leaders are those who also have the humility to acknowledge those elements that you just described and be aware there are bugs in the system, and I'm not always going to be at my best. And that awareness helps me to be better than I otherwise would, doesn't it?
Oh, that's such a great point. And I love that expression you just used, actually. I'm not always going to be at my best. And I've come across some amazing people, actually, who have shared that with their teams, and have said to them, you want me to be amazing, I'll do my best, and I'm not always going to be at my best. So just recognize that I'm human too. So this won't be a persistent thing. It'll be for a short period. Something will have happened. I may not have slept very well, or something's happened with the family or whatever it is. But I may not always be at my best. And actually, people genuinely appreciate that honesty.
And it certainly is something every one of us can relate to. And so in a leader, as you are listening and you're thinking about your own leadership, if you can be authentic in that way, that also gives people the chance to be authentic in their way and be their best. And we're all working at this together, right? None of us are there. So, okay, we've talked about favoritism, we've talked about self-bias, and the way we favor ourselves in effect. One or two more, that just so that we're anchoring in some different ways that.
Yeah, well, again, one of the when you start looking at the, looking at characteristics, again, if you look at the data on this, the biggest bias that exists is age. We have a tendency to favor younger people. And the interesting thing, actually, with a lot of the things on bias, actually, younger people have a bias towards younger people. Older people have a bias towards younger people. And it's a fascinating, it's one of those areas which is a fascinating area of bias, actually, because the if you're a woman, you're unlikely, I know it's possible, but you're unlikely to become a man or vice versa. If you're a person of color, you're unlikely, again, I know it's possible, it's unlikely you're going to become white or vice versa. But if you're young, with any luck, you become old. So you actually, if you hold stereotypes, if we hold stereotypes of an older person when we're younger, we carry those beliefs with us when we get older. And so not only do people see you as an older person, stereotype you, actually what happens is we stereotype ourselves. So the beliefs that we had of older people when we were younger, we then start applying to ourselves. I can't do that. I'm far too old. Oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Oh, new technology. It's all a mystery to me. And actually, that we start behaving in a way which conforms to the stereotypes that we had of older people when we were younger.
That is fascinating. I never had thought about it that way. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's known as self-stereotyping.
And as soon as you say that, I'm thinking of so many people that pop into my mind going, yeah, I've seen that. And even in my own aging, it's something that I occasionally do see in myself. At the same time, I also sometimes feel younger than ever. So maybe there's something positive in there too. But okay, so age is statistically, that is one of the most common outward looking biases, unconscious bias. Okay. All right, so we've got just as different examples. We've got those kinds of favoritism for relational favoritism. We've got the self-bias, advantaging ourselves, and then we've got the age, and there's obviously so many different others.
So many others, yeah.
All right, so unconscious bias. Let's start down the path of getting practical as a leader. We know this is a problem, as you said, misleading cognitive tendencies that lead us to incorrect conclusions. So we're coming to incorrect conclusions. Those incorrect conclusions are undermining our own success, undermining the productivity of our team, not helping the organization to be as effective as it could, and undermining our own influence as a leader as well. So what do we do? So let's talk about how do we strategically recognize our own biases, how to address them. Help us get started. What do we do?
But the first thing is to just be aware, like we had the conversation we're having here today, is just be aware of what it is we're talking about. So what is unconscious bias? How does it manifest itself? How does it work? What's the impact it has? And then what we can do about it? So there's just that level of awareness raising, which actually is very important. So conversations like this help. And also entering into conversations like this with an open mind and with that sense of humility that we were talking about earlier, and with a preparedness to kind of hold the tension, because we all like to think of ourselves. I like to think of myself as a fair person. And it's something I like about. I like the fact that I am a fair. I like the fact that I'm a fair person. And there are times when I'm not. And it's that tension between the way I'm acting and the way I see myself, or what people tell me I'm doing, and the way I see myself. And there's a tension there. And it's just being prepared to kind of hold that tension. To kind of okay, what's really going on here? What can I learn from this, and how can I do better? So this level of awareness raising is really, and education is really important. And then we move from there to looking at the actions that we can take. And some of the actions are actually in when we're in the moment are ridiculously simple. And one of the things that we can do is actually, so it's a cognitive tendency, it's a way of thinking. So we can actually just tell ourselves to stop thinking like that. That's all we have to do. So, I can meet somebody kind of, oh my word, never give a job to that person. haven't spoken, they haven't said anything yet. You know, I've just kind of based it on the way they look. And all that's actually a very old part of my brain that's reacting very emotionally to this. And all I have to do is literally just going to go, hang on a minute, Candola, take a minute, just stop, pause, give the person a chance. Right, let's move on. That doesn't take hardly any, it doesn't take hardly any time at all. You'd be quicker than that. So you actually move the activity in your brain from that old part of your brain, the amygdala, which is very emotional, to the bit of the brain which is literally behind your forehead, the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive decision part of the brain, the rational part of the brain. And I've moved my reaction from that part to this part. And so I calm down and I think it through. And so even though it's only taken a moment, it's actually quite significant in terms of where the activity is now taking place.
If we are unconscious, if we're not conscious of a particular bias, we need to become conscious of that before we can make that transition, right? Before we can, so, you know, as you said, having these conversations and being open to others are sharing with us and so forth. Do you have any recommendations? I hear what you're saying about how to pause in the moment once we have the awareness. Okay, wait a minute. What am I doing here? I'm curious about that step between those of how to become more conscious of our unconscious bias. It's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah. We can be aware that we're making a snap decision. So we can be aware of circumstances like that, and we can be aware of being this is about raising the awareness. Once we know that making snap decisions like this without any evidence is actually a sign that I'm basing it on my instinct, which then means there's a likelihood that I'm being biased here, so I just need to slow down a bit. The other thing to do is actually just kind of, once you've got that mindset, just being prepared to kind of listen to more information about different groups of people that you may not have encountered. We did some research last year about weight discrimination.
You said weight.
Weight, yeah. And we just had, we did a survey, and the number of people, particularly people who are overweight and living with obesity, the experiences they'd had and the way people had reacted. And I could see myself making those sorts of, not making those comments to them, but thinking those sorts of things. And it's just being, and then it's just kind of surprising myself, actually, that, wow, you know, you think you've kind of covered, I think I've covered all the bases, and then something else comes up. And I think, wow, that right, pay attention. Since then, I've been much more aware of people making kind of, I think they call it fat shaming, don't they? The fat shaming remarks and these sorts of things. I've become much more aware of, not necessarily me making them, I've become more aware of other people making them, but also recognizing the impact that's having on the targets of those jokes and comments. And that's a recent example of for me, actually.
And then the sensitizing and then becoming aware of it.
Yeah, and then once you sensitize, you actually become aware of other things too. And is that process of kind of extending your circles of empathy to people that you may not have always have extended them to.
Okay. Our guest today, Ben Candola. The topic is, he is an expert in unraveling unconscious bias in the workplace. And so we've been talking about different kinds of bias, about how to create and develop the self-awareness to, and then what to do as we start to be aware of those tendencies and when they're coming into play. I don't want to take it for granted that, as much research as there is out there and so forth, I don't want to take it for granted that people understand fully just how important it is to do this from a leadership perspective, that this is important work. It's vital, not just from a, you know, if I want to be a human-centered leader, that is merit enough to be building as inclusive and belonging a culture as I can. But there's also the driving of business success. And I know you've got a lot of research around that as well. What have you seen are the impacts, either the cost of bias on the negative side or the benefits, the business benefits of the opposite?
I mean, there are other forms of bias. So we have a preference for people like ourselves. our in-group, and from our in-group we get a sense of our we get a sense of ourselves, and it increases our self-esteem to be around people who kind of share my views and opinions and values, etc. In the workplace, that becomes problematic. In a team, that can be problematic because some people will feel that will feel excluded. And that once we pick up the this sense of exclusion, it has quite a dramatic impact. So we want to belong. Evolutionary psychologists, there's one evolutionary, a Dutch evolutionary psychologist actually, who I had the pleasure of meeting a few years ago, who has calculated that the way we live and work today, like when here we are, having a conversation with thousands of miles apart, but the way he has calculated that if human evolution was characterized as an hour, the way we live and work today would represent only 17 seconds. So actually, we want to belong to the tribe. We want to be part of the group and the team, and we will pick up very small signals which tell us A, that we belong, or B, that we don't belong. And once we pick up that sense of not belonging, and it doesn't have to be anything extreme, it could be just be very small gestures, we will start to withdraw. And again, going to the neuroscience, it showed that once we pick up the cues of exclusion and not belonging, there's a particular part of the brain, the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex, DACC, which fires up, which is the same part of the brain where we feel physical pain. So actually, we genuinely feel it. And what happens then is it doesn't feel safe in that environment. So then we start to withdraw, and we won't engage in we won't put in any discretionary effort. We won't be so civil to other people in the workplace, which of course makes the situation worse, and then you become even more excluded. And the consequences of that then are that you don't get the benefits of being included in the team. And the research shows quite clear: you have diversity and you have inclusion; they're related and they're different. Whether you have diversity or not, inclusion is always a good thing, because if you are, I'm not sure I like the term, but people do refer to homogeneous teams, so people are much the same. If you're in a homogeneous team and you don't feel included, you still will want to leave. You won't be engaged. You won't be motivated. If you're on a homogeneous team and you are included, you get quicker decisions. There's low conflict, which is a good thing. But also you get low task conflict. Which isn't necessarily a good thing, as you know. Actually, it's good to have different ideas about the way something should be done. If you have high diversity and low inclusion, that brings problems.
Yes.
And one of the biggest problems, you get a high degree of interpersonal conflict, which is the worst type of conflict you can have. And what you're really looking for is diversity and inclusion together. And one of the biggest benefits the research shows quite clearly around the world is you get higher innovation and better productivity. So and our argument has never been inclusion or diversity for their own sake, but it does help individuals, but it's also for the sake of the team, to make it a high performing team.
All right. Well, it's about as practical as we could get in terms of the kind of workplace I think we'd all like to work. And, might be my own bias, but I want to work at a place where I'm comfortable showing up, everybody else is comfortable showing up, and together we are doing that in a way that we're really able to achieve some remarkable results. So all the way around. And we have limited time, and you have such a depth of knowledge here. So I want to maybe hone in on an area that I know you have some expertise in, as much as in this grand topic as you do, an area that I don't see get as much attention when we're talking about the work of inclusion in the workplace, and that is when it comes to the topic of religion. And I know that you've got some expertise there. And just, open that door and walk us through it a little bit. What do you see happening? What are some of the challenges? What, as leaders, ought we to know?
Yeah, it's we talked about bias at the beginning of the show. We actually have a when it comes to diversity, I think we have a bias as well. Organizations have a bias. So they don't look at diversity, they look at certain things. So we look at gender, which is great, and we look at race, which is fabulous. And then you kind of, well, kind of that's it really. We kind of don't look at anything else. And then there's resistance to the initiatives that organizations put in place. And we just thought, actually, that can't be human diversity, just two characteristics like that. And so that's why we started exploring things like weight. We've recently done a bit of work on refugees and employment in the United Kingdom. We've got research coming out soon on neurodiversity, and we've done it on disability. But it's a massive topic, which is religion. 80% of the people in the world are believers in some faith or another. And yet, in the United Kingdom, and we also did this research was also carried out in the United States, actually. The organizations, they talk about religion in their policies. In the UK, it's covered by the legislation, but no, and 91% of organizations in the UK say they believe they are inclusive when it comes to religion, which sounds fabulous, but nobody ever asked the people who have a faith themselves what it's like being in a workplace. And we've asked them, and we actually found, first of all, that people wanted to be heard. This is the biggest piece of research we've ever carried out. We think it's the biggest piece of research looking at religion in the workplace ever carried out. Nearly 7,000 people responded to our surveys. Well, I thought, well, there's clearly a population, a community of people here. Just like, thank goodness you've asked. And we were finding that, and the results were kind of similar but different to the United States. We had over 1,000 people in each of six faiths. One of the things that surprised me, I try not to be surprised by research. I'm sure you try the same. But the one thing that
I
did
love to
surprise
be surprised by research. That means I'm
well,
learning something.
I like... But the one thing that did surprise me is that when it comes to faiths, so we had Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Sikhism, Hinduism. So we had six faiths, over 1,000 people in each. And when it came to those faiths, I expected Christians to kind of feel better in the workplace than people of other faiths because of the predominant kind of part of the culture in the United States and Britain. And it wasn't. It was actually the distinction that was being made was actually between believers and non-believers. It didn't matter which faith you had. If you had a faith, it kind of was something that was going to make you feel uncomfortable in the workplace. Something like half of the people, 48% of people in our survey said that they didn't feel comfortable talking about key dates in their faith at work, which is huge. Only a third of people, or just over a third of people, said that their line managers were comfortable with them taking days off for religious festivals. Half of our sample actually wore clothing and symbols related to their faith outside of work. Of those, less than a quarter wore those same dress, wore dress and symbols related to their faith in work, and only a sixth of those felt comfortable doing so. So you actually kind of find that there's been a dramatic reversal, I think, over the last 100 years, where 100 years ago, if you were not a believer, I think it probably would have been something at work that you would have kept to yourself. And 100 years later, here we are, and it's believers who kind of think, actually, I think I better not mention this. And the reason they told us this is that the biggest reason was they feared being stereotyped and people making assumptions about them.
Which could, I could definitely see how that transcends any particular belief system, is that concern about what that's going to mean in the stereotyping. It's such an interesting topic. And I, as I think about what those experiences can be and look like and so forth, there's also an element that, in our work with different clients and people who get frustrated sometimes, is there's the, and religion in particular, because at least for some belief systems, there is the, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm sure there's a scientific or a good sociological word for it, but the way that I would describe it is an assumption that I have the truth with a capital T. And that doesn't leave room for the other aspects, almost the opposite of the self-awareness that there could be a bug in the system of my thinking or beliefs or anything of that sort, and creates some additional challenges there, which I don't know that I have a question. It's just where my own thinking goes.
I think it's a great observation. I think it's a great observation. So, and we talk in the report about appropriate and inappropriate behavior when it comes to faith. Well, that doesn't just apply to people who are not believers. It applies to believers as well. And I think that the point you're making, which I think is a really good one, is that I'm in the workplace, I'm not in my church, and I have to respect the fact there are different views and different ways of doing things. And I can't just impose my views on somebody else. There needs to be a degree of negotiation and discussion around these things. And if I seek to impose my beliefs on you, David, because I think my faith system, my belief system is better than yours, that's clearly going to be contrary to the organization's values. And my behavior as a result should be considered to be inappropriate.
Which in and of itself is a belief system.
And it's just like, well, then you move into this area, don't you, about beliefs and non-beliefs. And we happen to be talking about religion, but you're right. There are other belief systems too.
Which is part of what makes this a tricky conversation for some.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's a fascinating
absolutely.
and fascinating. I can see you're enjoying it, and I'm enjoying it too. But because we haven't discussed it enough, it's kind of the for me, it's just kind of whoa. I'm kind of so the point you just made was a profound one, and I find it challenging, and I find it quite and I find it and but and I like it. I like the fact that it's challenging, and I find it quite funny as well because you said it in a warm-hearted way, but it's also kind of quite funny as well. You know, there's an amusing side to it.
Absolutely. It's part and parcel of I think since I was a pre-teenager asking myself these questions about ultimately how do we live together? And I've asked that question in so many different ways and from a leadership perspective and personal essays and all the different angles and it's an evolving question. There's not just an answer but it is a critical question, and I think your work really starts to get into some of those intricacies of how we answer that.
But it's the work on religion, actually, which has made me think that actually workplaces, and you've known this, and your book's about workplace conflict, but actually it's made me think that actually workplaces are genuinely the genuine spaces where people of different communities have to meet. Because actually, when we go home, we may in fact go to separate parts of the town and separate parts of the cities or separate parts of the country. And if we stayed there, we would never meet. But workplaces, we bump into all sorts of people. And by having these conversations in the workplace, we are creating, I think, a way of having conversations in society.
Yeah, that's so true. And from a leadership perspective, we're talking about business leadership. It is one of the reasons that, and listeners of the show who have been listening for a long time will be aware that I periodically call us back to this, that you're not just leading your team for the results that you're achieving for the business. It's not just the product, the widget you're making, the service you're providing, that your leadership has a lot more at play. And it is actually not just theoretically, but actually in practice, helping us build whatever tomorrow is going to be for all of us. And that it's that important. And it may not be what all of us signed up for when we raised our hand to say, yeah, I'm going to lead this team, or I'm going to, be a department head here. But it's a little bit like what you encountered raising your hand to lead the second 11 cricket team, isn't it? It's oh wow, there's a lot more here than maybe I realized at first. I love that.
Sorry to go back to your book, but your book is about workplace conflict and the phrases we use for workplace, right? It's the workplace, and you're making it quite clear it's the workplace, and it's not going to stay in the workplace.
That's true.
Now you've actually chosen, and you and your co-author have defined it. You know, we're you know. We'll stick to what we're good at and we'll stay in our lane, and it's the workplace and it's conflict. But those phrases and those techniques and those tools that people are coming to contact with are not going to stay in the workplace. They're going to, and so actually, it's reinforcing that point, isn't it, about what we do in the workplace can make for a better society.
Undoubtedly. And as an author yourself, I know you never, ever have to apologize for saying, hey, I want to talk about your book for a moment. Oh, all right. Well, Binna, this has been a fantastic conversation. You are absolutely correct. I am enjoying it immensely. So again, our guest today, Binna Khandola. Binna, where do we connect with you? Where can we learn more about your work? Tell us where to go.
Yeah, the business website is Pearn Khandola, Pearn Khandola, and I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm kind of dropping out. So I'm the other social media I'm kind of dropping out of actually, but I'm mostly on LinkedIn, and those are the two principal sources actually, maybe.
All right, very good. Well, I hope that you'll take the opportunity to connect with Binna on LinkedIn and on the business website there, pernkandola.com. We'll definitely have those links in the show notes as well. Wow. Oh, gosh, with the limited time we have left, where do I want to take this to wrap it up? So many different directions we've gone. I think I'm going to ask a maybe this is a philosophical question, but I think it has practical underpinnings too. Is there, and I think you might, maybe you've already answered this, is there such a thing to be achieved as bias-free leadership, or is it, are those bugs in our software always going to be there? And it's really a goal of being aware of them and working through them.
That's more it. I think we can work on specific biases and kind of work away and kind of worrying those away. But there's always going to be something else that's going to pop up that we won't, we like you said earlier, actually, we won't be aware of until somebody tells us, you do realize you said that about them, or you made that decision without really considering them. And it's just being open to that, actually. I think that's the most important thing. And adopting an approach of not being defensive when you get the feedback.
Well, then
I
I'm
think
gonna.
the thing that one advantage I've found in getting older is the gap between somebody giving me some critical feedback and me apologizing. The gap between the two has got shorter.
That sounds like a positive development. I'm hoping I'm heading that direction. I haven't done the math to see, but that actually takes me to the final question I have for you today. I think Binna is. You mentioned this earlier, and you just mentioned it again. There is that comfort we develop with being able to hold that tension between our image of ourself and then this reality that we're perceiving or learning or is presented to us in these different moments. And I think for many people that there's discomfort there, right? None of us like to see ourselves different than whatever that ideal image of ourself is. Do you have any advice on how we can get comfortable with that discomfort?
I think the one thing to do is actually is to it's easy to say, isn't it? I just hold the discomfort. But I think this is where if you could got somebody who you know does that sort of thing, you've got leaders who you can see actually will reflect. You can give an immediate reaction, and it may not be a great reaction, but you can always reflect on that and kind of think, actually, was there a point there? Were they thinking this through? What were the arguments for and against? And why did I respond in that way? And it's just kind of giving yourself that moment, not necessarily in the moment because you're doing it, but afterwards, just kind of the opportunity just to reflect on what happened and our reactions to it, and just kind of think, could I? Is that what is there for me to learn there?
And there's always something for us to learn. I think that's part of it. That's, you know, and I hate to say getting older is part of the solution because we've both talked about that. Like, as I get older, I get a little more comfortable with, yeah, no, I don't know everything. No, I'm not my idealized image of myself. And that's okay. And so, like, if I could help all of us to have that chip and have myself help myself to have even more of that, that's okay. I'm in process. And with what I learned today, I can be better tomorrow. And that's good. And that there's nothing wrong with that.
And to learn, and yeah, and there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong actually with my daughter was asking me yesterday, something had happened at school, and one of her friends was acting not very helpfully, And her friend kind of recognized that she hadn't, but she didn't apologize. And my daughter was saying, "Well, why can't she just say sorry?" I said, like, "Some people just find it really hard." That admitting an error, admitting fault is actually for some people is really hard. It's going to get in the way of their learning.
Absolutely. Well, and like we always say, as a leader, if you're not apologizing when you've screwed up or made a mistake, your team already knows. So there's nothing that you're hiding there.
We have a huddle every day, and I was out with the other partners. We had a huddle this evening, and they asked me what my highlight was. A very busy day, and my highlight today was a 10-minute meeting where it popped into my calendar very late, and somebody just said, "Can we catch up? We're doing some research, and can we catch up?" And then came on the screen. It was a young one of the young psychologists, and said, "Oh, did the survey? I made a mistake. And I thought I'd better tell you." Oh, wow. I mean,
Nice.
how wonderful was that?
Powerful.
It's
Well,
powerful.
speaks not just to their character, but also to the leadership environment, the culture that you've created within the team. So,
Well, thank you. Yeah.
absolutely. Well, Benna, speaking of highlights of the day, this has been one for me. So, thank you for this
I mean, your book
conversation.
launch today.
I know, and amongst all of that, it's also been a highlight. So I'm very, very pleased that we were able to have this conversation. Thank you so
Thank you so
much.
much, and thank you for inviting me. It's been it, I'm very honored to be here, and it's been an enormous pleasure.
Well, it has for me as well. And back to our concluding moment with our officer of the Order of the British Empire, Benna Kendola. Again, the only one, to my knowledge, we have ever had on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and expertise with us. Listeners, you got a glimpse of the cost of bias when we're not aware of it, what's possible when we are driving inclusion and the effects on our team and the business results. To cultivate that self-awareness, recognize we've got these misleading cognitive tendencies that can lead us to incorrect conclusions, to be aware of them, cultivate that self-awareness, and hey, have a sense of humor. It's okay. You're not the best version of yourself, not if you're open to becoming that tomorrow. So, Benna, thanks again, helping
Thank you.
us to be the leader we'd want our boss to be. Appreciate you being here.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.